This is Olympic champion Scott Hamilton. Yes, the real Scott Hamilton. And you're listening to the other Scott Hamilton show, where you should be entertained, informed, and maybe even amused. Just don't expect any backflips. I mean, have you seen him skate?
You win 10 wins and they say it's a down year, man. You've really arrived. You've done a good job. Everybody should be that lucky. But the standard is the standard, I guess. The standard upstate. And a lot of games. Joining us on the Say Tama Hotline, the man who established that standard, it's Clemson coach Dabo Swinney. Dabo, how you doing? Dabo.
Hello,
how we doing?
Hey, you got me?
I remember my first day using a phone.
All right. How you guys?
I'm well, Coach. What's going on?
Oh, just getting ready, man. Getting ready.
Do you like having that extra little bit of time, that week one start, instead of starting this weekend?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely, man. I've never been a big fan of the week zero, just simply because you got to start, you know, a lot earlier in July. It just makes for a long camp and all that stuff. That's the one thing that's a challenge about, well, one of the things about, you know, when all the playoffs expand is, you know, having these guys start in early July and finish late January. It's just a long time for these guys. So, no, I do like the fact that they gave us a couple more days this year. That was great. We actually had 31 days. In the past, we had 29 days to get 25 practices, and now they gave us 31 days to get 25 practices, and that was great because they gave you a couple other opportunities to just kind of let them rest a little bit as you go through camp. So it was a good camp for us, and now we're full speed ahead on opponent prep. And they got a little mock game today, this afternoon, and can't wait till Monday gets here and kind of officially have game week.
I hear you, Coach. We're excited for it. While I got your attention, though, there's a couple of things I'd like to get your take on, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on it, but you're a guy that's been around a while, so I want to get your perspective. We got coaches from opposing schools going at it. We got conferences going at it. We even got coaches within the same athletic department taking jabs at each other. How did we get to this point in college athletics?
Well, I just think, you know, social media. I mean, that's really what drives, I think, all that stuff, to be honest with you. You know, back when I first got into coaching, you had your local beat writers and, you know, and you had local articles and, you know, that was kind of it. Whereas now it's such a reactionary, you know, world we live in, and it's such automatic information, you know, instantly. So that's, I think, what drives a lot of this drama and reactions and stuff that you get.
And Dabo, I know that's been a big story this offseason. You've had some changes on your staff, and I'm not going to beat that to death. But it does make me wonder this. Your program, presumably like a lot of programs, is focused on preparing student-athletes for the most success, for helping them succeed in college, on the field, and in the classroom, but also when they go out and they decide to be, you know, real-life human beings like the rest of us, you know, out in the real world. But how much of your program, though, is focused on preparing coaches, to helping them get to that next level? You got Tony Elliott out there now, head coach first time, Brent Venables. It's almost like servant leadership a little bit, isn't it? You got to help them get ready for that next step as well.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I think that's part of my responsibility. I mean, certainly we're a player development program. We've always been that way, but I think it's critical that you develop your staff just like you develop your players. I mean, you got a kid that shows up here and, you know, he goes through a transformation process from the time he's a freshman when he rolls out of here as a senior. I mean, ultimately, man, you want him to be a graduate. You really, truly want him to be secure in who he is as a man and to be ready for whatever comes next. And you want him just truly equipped with the skills and tools he needs to be successful in life. And, you know, that, to me, the same that you want for your staff. You know, if you have a staff person who's here, whether he's one person is 1 year with you or they're here 10 years with you, whatever it is, you just hope that because they were a part of the program, that they're better and you know, and they've grown and they're more prepared and so forth. So for me, you know, knowing that you're going to have players move on every single year, you know, you have to develop your team and develop your players and have that next guy ready, and you don't wait till a guy's gone before you go recruit a guy and all that type of stuff. You have to constantly, you know, evaluate and develop, and it's the same thing with your staff. You know, you have to always have a plan, and you know, you have to always be prepared for change, you know, when it comes to your staff. So it's awesome when you have, and you know, used to you didn't have the opportunity like we do now. I mean, when I came to Clemson, I mean, we had 9 assistants, a head coach, 2 GAs, and 1 ops person. I mean, that was it. So if somebody left, you know, you there was really no one there to promote. And so with the change in college football, really, honestly, since Coach Saban came in at Alabama, he's the one that really kind of changed the infrastructure. He really kind of brought more of a pro infrastructure to college football with personnel and things like that, staffing wise. So that part has changed. And now it's just critical, you know, because you have an opportunity to have people on your staff and you have to invest in them. And we do that. I mean, we take 5 days in the summer and we really truly reinstall our whole program and organization from top to bottom as if no one knows anything about it. And that's a huge part of how we, you know, grow and develop our staff. And then so just constant empowerment and teaching and making sure everybody's always on the same page. But it's a critical part, I think, of any organization to develop the people that you have within the building.
How do you reconcile, though, when one of your guys who was on your staff and he goes on to be a head coach, he gets fired? Do you reach out to him? Do you maybe take it personally because you're the one who was given the opportunity to prepare him and he wasn't able to do it? Do you critique what he did? What's that like?
Well, I mean, you certainly try to, you know, help as much as you possibly can. And you know, whether it be giving advice, but, you know, everyone in this business, it's a hard business. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into being successful. And sometimes, you know, guys are in a hurry to be maybe a head coach and they don't take a great job or whatever and you put yourself in a tough spot. It doesn't matter how great a coach you are. You have to, you know, have, you know, the right resources to have a chance to win, you know. And, you know, whether it be infrastructure, staffing, the ability to recruit, you know, whatever it is. You certainly want everyone to be successful, but it's almost like, I mean, you know, just you have a good franchise, if you will, and every franchisee is not going to be successful because at the end of the day, it still comes down to the people, you know, that are doing it every day. And I try to do everything I can to help the guys that have had opportunities, you know, to move on and be head coaches. You know, Brent has reached out many times and do everything I can to help him. Same with Tony. So hopefully those guys will be very successful. And they got hired because they're great coaches and they've earned the opportunity. But now, you know, they got to go do it. Now they're the ones that are making the decisions on a daily basis and on everything in the organization. So, you know, you just hope that they will have great success, and I personally believe they will.
Joined by Clemson coach Dabo Swinney. Coach, just a couple more minutes, please. But you ever sit back and just say, man, I can't believe the life I have? Because, Dabo, I'm a little familiar with your story, and you're a man, and I'm just going to be blunt with you. You're a man who is given opportunity to make generational wealth and take care of your kids, their kids, and so on, and you're able to impact and change lives. But I heard a story about you, And this really resonated with me in a number of different ways. You were going to have to drop out of school or something, and you got a credit card the day you needed to make a payment or something, and it kept you in school, and you're able to move forward with your future. And now here you are, a wealthy man. I mean, do you ever sit back and go, I can't believe this happened to me.
Man, I reflect all the time on my journey. You know, I journal, I write, because, you know, it's just encouraging to me. And, to be able to look back on my life and all the things, I mean, it's my journey is what's made me who I am. And it gives me the perspective that I need to, do my job. And to not lose my sanity, if you will. I try never to forget where I came from, and it's been an unbelievable journey. I'm 52, and it's been a lot of fun. But I've always been a worker. I've always been a guy that has a good attitude. I've always been a worker, a grinder, and I've always been focused on just trying to achieve, and trying to get better and just be the best version of me. That's just been my focus my whole life. Never been a guy that's really, compared myself to other people or anything like that, or worried about, what I don't have. I've just always tried to make the best of whatever I've had my entire life and just put my head down, enjoy it, stay in the moment. And, I sit here now and I look up and I go, holy cow, man, I've been a parent for 24 years. All my kids are grown now. I've had three boys, and they're all, out of the house and empty nester. And my wife and I met in the first grade. We started going together in the sixth grade. We've been married 28 years, and, we've been together our entire life. I've known this sweet girl I come home to every night. I mean, we've known each other our entire life, and it's just been an unbelievable blessing. And then I just think about all the challenges and hard times, and I see the sovereignty of God and how he was always right there with me all the time. And that just gives me a lot of peace. When I had nothing, I was happy. When we had a little bit, I was happy. When we have a lot, I'm happy, because, my peace and joy and my foundation of life doesn't come from, any of that stuff. It's always come from, my faith. And it's been a great journey, but man, God gets all the glory. That's all I can tell you, because he's opened every door. He's ordered every step. He kept me healthy when I was trying to walk on and earn a scholarship, and just what you alluded to. I'm literally getting ready to have to, leave school, in the fall of 89, after I'd worked a whole year and we're finishing up camp, and it was just a mess, cause my Pell Grant wasn't in. And man, next thing you know, I just randomly opened it, went out the mailbox, and I got this piece of mail, and it was a Discover, a letter, and with two checks attached to it. And I didn't have a credit card. I didn't have anything like that. And, all of a sudden, I got a $1,000 balance and was able to stay in school, pay my rent up, and go pay half my tuition, which I had to pay that day, and I was counting on it, but my grant wasn't in, and all this. But I just look back on that, and I always felt God's presence. That's the best way I can say it. And I just look back sometimes, and I'm thankful. I'm grateful. I'm for all of it, the good, the bad, every ounce of it. I heard somebody say sometime, life happens for us, not to us. And everything that's happened in my life happened for me, and I'm thankful for it, because that's prepared me to be the best version of me today at 52.
Coach, I love it. I got one more question for you, and I want to bring your wife in on this, because she's been with you on this journey, and coaching has changed so much since you began your coaching journey, even had that little break at one point in there. Are you concerned about the profession? Because even what you do now as the head coach is very different than what you had to do 5 years ago. And what assistants are doing is crazy, and they're not getting paid nearly as much as what a head coach makes. Are you afraid about the future of the profession of coaching, at least at the college level?
Well, I think that it's a very uncertain time as far as the future. I think the future of college football has never been better or brighter, just as far as the game. But I do think that there's so much uncertainty from the coaching aspect of it, because there's just really not a lot of structure. There's I think we're kind of at a real weird time where there's, I think everybody knows that there's some serious change coming, but, you know, it's just kind of like, when's it going to happen, you know, as far as like a new governance structure and kind of just, you know, you have some order. There's a little bit of chaos right now. But I think at the end of the day, the bad is what gets all the press, always has, you know, probably always will. There's a lot more good than there is bad. There's a lot of really good men and women out there, good people. And so, you know, the only thing I would say is that you should be called to coach. That's just the way I've always thought about it. There's opportunity to make a great living and all that, but I think you should truly be called to coach, and you should not coach just to, you know, because you think you got a chance to go make a lot of money or something like that. And because now, you know, it wasn't that way when I got into coaching. I mean, it just wasn't. I coached 8 years at Alabama, and my highest salary was $80,000, and it just was different. And you knew going in that, hey, if you ever became a head coach, you might make good money, but as an assistant, you'd live a good life. And that's just what I wanted to do. My wife was a teacher. I think there is a little bit of an aspect out there with maybe people getting in it for the wrong reasons, because at the end of the day, you should coach because you care about young people and impacting and shaping their lives. And that's really it. You know, that should be what drives you. And that, because that ultimately is what you're going to be measured by as a coach when it's all said and done, and you meet those guys and when they're 30 and 35 and 40 years old, the impact that you had on your life, do they really hug your neck and embrace you, or do they just kind of walk the other way? To me, that's ultimately the measure of a coach.
Has anybody ever brought a baby up and said, this is my kid, Dabo?
Not yet. So I've had a lot of lizards and dogs and birds and cats I've had a lot of that, but no other live human. So maybe one day that'll happen and I can say I have officially arrived. But not to this point. It has not happened.
He's Dabo Swinney, football coach, Clemson Tigers. Tigers going to play Georgia Tech on Labor Day Monday, September 5th. Coach, hey. Appreciate your time, appreciate your thoughts, and I hope we get a chat again down the road, pal. Really do.
Okay, I appreciate it. Hey, have a great day. Go Tigers.
All righty, bud. Appreciate it. That's Dabo Swinney, head coach of the Clemson Tigers. Man, lizards, dogs, cats, no live human being named Dabo. It's not his real name, I mean, but there's some, I mark my words, there's somebody out there right now wearing orange coveralls, purple T-shirt, whatever. They have named their child Dabo. You take that to the bank.